Hello and welcome back for another episode of Podcast DX, the show that brings you interviews with people just like you whose lives were forever changed by a medical diagnosis. I'm Lita.
I'm Ron.
And I'm Jean Marie.
Collectively, we're the host of Podcast DX. On today's show, we're talking with strangers on a train.
Strangers on a train? Yeah. Are we reviewing movies now?
No. Today, we're talking with Bill Hennessy, Ruben Rodriguez, Sophie Chang.
On Tuesday, June 11th of 2019, Bill was on his way home from work, but he was running a little late. He didn't want to miss his train, so he started jogging to catch it. Ruben and Sophie, who, by the way, is a nurse, Sophie's a nurse, were already aboard. Bill was able to get on board just as the doors were closing, and I will let them explain in more in a minute, but welcome to the show, Sophie, Bill, and Ruben.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for having us.
Welcome. Boy, that sounds exciting, Jean. We're so glad that you could join us today and in studio, which is really a pleasant surprise. It's nice to have you all here with us. I know this story is going to be a good one with that lead-in from Jean. But before you tell us the story, I have a question. Did you know each other before June 11th? Bill?
No, I don't remember much about the episode.
But you hadn't seen them before on a train or anything?
I might have seen Ruben before. I might have seen Sophie, but there's always a lot of people on the train, so I didn't really know them or recognize them or anything like that beforehand.
Okay.
There's no, like, friends group that travels on the train together?
No.
Well, there are, but...
Oh, okay.
You're not them.
Yeah. Okay. I have Bill not in it. Maybe one of these days he can graduate to it.
And because you were unconscious at the time, this is the first time that you're actually meeting with Sophie, is that right?
Yes, I was able to meet Ruben afterwards, but today was the first time I've met Sophie.
Yeah.
So.
Wow.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yes, it's pretty wild.
So, and you're friends now, I take it, because you're all here together and you're joking and...
Your conversation beforehand, it sounds like you guys have known each other forever.
Right, like a family almost.
Yeah, we've become pretty good friends and I started a Snapchat group. Okay. And
wow, he does Snapchat.
Yeah. with Bill and his daughter, who's just a beautiful young lady, and her boyfriend Cole, who are in college. And so we Snapchat all the time, just on daily for the most part, right, Bill?
Just whatever it seems like, hey, we should let everybody else see.
That's amazing.
Well, now that our listeners are sitting at the edge of their seat, do you want to tell us what happened when you got on the train, Bill?
So I was rushing to meet the train. I was supposed to have a doubleheader that night. I'm an umpire as well.
Okay.
And so I was trying to make that train so I wouldn't be late for the games. And initially I missed the train. Like, the doors were closed on the first car.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of stopped and I was catching my breath a little bit. And then I looked up and I saw the doors two cars up were still open.
Oh.
So I said, all right, I'll make an effort, but I'm sure it'll close before I get there. But so I jogged and I got to the next car and I literally got on right as the doors were closing. They kind of were closing on my backpack.
Oh.
So then when I get on the train, I always walk to the other end of the train. That's where I get off and I park my car on the Aurora side.
Right,
I always go all the way to the end. So I went through the first car and I got into the next car. And then my thought pattern was I thought that I decided I was going to stop and catch my breath for a minute. So I thought I took my backpack off and I put my hands on my knees and I was like catching my breath.
Mm-hmm.
But apparently none of that happened at all.
Oh, what happened?
Ruben?
So I was in the fourth car and I'm a big Cub fan. And so as soon as I sat down and the train was completely packed, it was one of those real, real hot days. And standing room only, about 150 people on this particular car. And the reason I know this timeline is I share it with everybody so well is because... what the conductor had said over the intercom. It says, people, sorry, we're running a little bit late. And the train leaves at 4:38. And as soon as she said that, I looked at my watch. It was 4:40. And she goes, the doors in car 3 were stuck. Now they're fixed. And it turns out that same conductor told me later that Bill was the last one to walk through those stuck doors. And I feel that the good Lord held those mm-hmm. doors open for him, because if he would have been on that platform, he would have never made it. But as soon as that happened, as soon as she said that, I looked at my watch, 4:40, and then that's when I hear a tremendous fall. The fall was so loud that I thought somebody, it's a two-level train, I thought somebody had fallen from the top all the way down to the floor. It was
and you're not
loud.
That big of a guy, Reuben. I mean, Bill.
Yeah.
I mean, he made a, oh, well, you had a backpack on.
Yeah, I had a backpack
okay.
on.
Okay.
But yeah, it does, like when somebody falls, like picture when I fell that one time.
Oh,
we
yes,
had a three-floor
yes.
house at the time, and I fell on the first floor, and they heard and felt it on the third floor.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, falls.
So falls,
oh,
yeah, dead that, fall
it was so
intense.
It was so, so loud.
So when that happened, what was everybody else doing after that loud thud that you heard?
Oh my gosh. That's when the chaos broke out. And I was sitting at the very back of the train, and I had started watching the Cubs game. And as soon as I heard that, like I said, I thought somebody had fallen from the top or it was a fight. That's that's really what I thought.
Okay.
And because people just started screaming.
Oh.
And it was just so hot. And right away, I looked at the gentleman next to me, and I said, hey, man, let me through. And I don't know.
So if there was a fight, you think you would have, you know, tried to maybe break it up?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
I would have been right in the middle of it.
Okay.
I don't know.
It was a lover. He would have
talked
about
it. I would have been there to save Bill in that way, too. just along the other guy wasn't too big. But
so what happened when you got there?
So as soon as that happened, I left my backpack and everything behind. Again, this place is packed with people, and it's only standing room only. So the aisleway for trains, for the metro trains, are really narrow. And so I had to get through a bunch of people to get to Bill, because he collapsed closer to the front of the train. And I get there, and I see him on the ground, and he's laying on his left side. He still has a backpack on. So that's how come he couldn't roll directly on his back. And right when I saw his face, I know that looked much too well. It's called agonal breathing. He was gasping for his last breath. He was looking right through me, and I know that look only because 4 years earlier, 4 years earlier, almost to the day, my colleague at work, I work for Bank of America, and my colleague at work died in my hands.
Oh, I'm so sorry to hear.
Yeah, it was an unbelievable experience. I used the AED on him. It shocked him 4 times. But on this one, I was all by myself. I did the compressions. I set up the AED. I ripped his shirt off. I put the pads on him. And I gave him mouth to mouth. And he died in my hands. So because of that experience, when I saw Bill, that friend I'm talking about, my colleague, his name was Kendall. When I saw Bill, I go, oh my gosh, this is Kendall all over again. And right away, I yelled out these commands on the train. After the Kendall incident, one more thing. After the Kendall incident, I always know where AEDs are. And
an AED is what? Tell our listeners what an AED is.
Well, Sophie, go ahead and tell
me. Okay, so an AED, it's pretty much an automatic external defibrillator. So it doesn't really shock someone back to life. It more so puts their heart in like a correct rhythm so that the heart can beat right.
Okay.
So it's a device that used on victims that have sudden cardiac arrest, and they pretty much send an electric pulse or a shock to the heart. So when your heart is beating in an abnormal rhythm, not really giving the blood to the brain, to your whole body, and that's why people pass out,
okay.
It sends a shock to make that heart go into a normal rhythm. So it can start bringing all that blood to the brain, and, you know, pretty much within, if you don't get like a shock or treatment within minutes, the sudden cardiac arrest, you know, a person can pretty much die.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. I just didn't want our listeners to hear that term and not understand what it was.
Oh,
so,
yeah, sure.
Yes. So, go ahead. Ruben.
So after the incident with Kendall, I always know where AEDs are. And the second car in all the trains always have an AED. The first car always has an AED. And so I yelled out this commands as, again, it was complete chaos, people screaming. I yelled out, there's an AED in the first car. Somebody go get that now. And if there's the second question I said, I yelled out was, is there any professional medical personnel on this phone? Come up here right now. And so that's when, and what happens too in this, these situations, and I've been involved in, you know, total of five, but that's a whole nother story. But is that people get terrified mm-hmm. and scared and they just watch. Mm-hmm. And what happened here was, and also you have the doubters too, where somebody, I remember somebody right directly behind me yelling, I would say, we need to get his backpack off, get him on his back, because I was ready to start a CPR on him. Mm-hmm. And that person yells, he's choking. If you take that backpack off, he's going to die of choking. And I right away, I knew not to listen to that, mm-hmm. right? And as soon as I took that backpack off, I was straddling over him. I took that backpack and I went to hand it off to somebody behind me. And by the way, at 4:40, everything started. And this was already like 4:42, 4:43 that I started doing this. And I went to hand a backpack back to him. And all of a sudden, out of nowhere comes this amazing young lady who jumps in front of me. She's wearing her blue scrubs. And I remember it jumps in front of me and just starts doing compressions. I go, oh my gosh, where'd she come from? I don't know where. Well, it turns out, and I'll let Sophie tell her side of the story, but by the way, this is such an honor to be here with her today, because since the incident, we have not met in person. When all this went down, all we did was high-five each other, say, hey, great job, and we didn't share names or anything.
Wow.
So I can't wait to hear her side of the story, so I'll finish my side of the story. So she came out of nowhere, and it was such a tight space that I said to her, hey, let me take over compressions, because we kind of knew that an AED was coming. Mm-hmm. And right away we switched, and I started doing compressions on him. And right when that happened, the AED, we never found out who these two ladies are. They went running through the trains. We're in car four. They went start running. When I yelled the command, go get the AED, they went running all the way through the cars, screaming, saying, is there a doctor, nurse? And I believe that's when Sophie first heard them. And they went running these for the AED, and Sophie came running right away. And as soon as we were going, the AED showed up. And Sophie, having her there is unbelievable, because my first incident with my friend Kendall, I was all by myself. I did the compressions, I did the mouth-to-mouth, and I put the AED on him, which is a lot of work by yourself. So right when it happened, I continued compressions. Sophie took the AED and got everything ready. And right away, I started taking his shirt off. And this is where it's funny, my thumb, I couldn't use my right thumb because I was getting ready to have surgery on it. So I couldn't believe I didn't rip Bill's shirt off, because it was mm-hmm. such a nice looking shirt. I should have. That's a whole nother story. So I should have ripped it off. Cut but instead, buttons. I did button by button. I could not believe I was doing this. I should have just, after I saw what the firemen's did to his, the paramedics did to his shirt, I said, I should have done that.
Yeah, once they got a hold of me, they shredded it.
That's a neat picture in itself.
It was already open and accessible.
And so I started unbuttoning his shirt, and when I was doing this, I finally got unbuttoned, and I wiped out. He was sweating profusely, still gasping for that last breath. I wiped off the sweat off his chest, and right when I did that, it was like clockwork. Sophie had the first pad ready for me. I put it on, and she gave me a second pad, put it on. The second pad, I remember, I put it on, and, you know, Sophie being an awesome nurse, I must have put it too high, because right away she took it off again and slid it down another 3 inches or so. Yeah, she probably don't remember that, but she did that. And right away, this was a game changer. That AED started talking to us, and it said this, taking vitals. And all of a sudden, it said, stand back, applying a shock. And you know what? That shock right there, was definitely a game changer. I never forget when it was ready to shock. Sophie was so concerned about me. She goes, "Don't touch him! Don't touch him! Don't touch him!" I go, "I'm not touching him." I was straddling right over him. I go, "I don't care if I get shocked. But it shocked him. And then the AED is the most amazing, amazing machine.
Is that something that the person actually jumps a little bit?
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
So it's a big shock.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Can I ask a quick question? You said it was in the first car. How many cars?
They were in the fourth.
The AED was in the first car.
It turns out that's a good question, Ron. And what it was, there's always an AED in the first car, but it turns out that AED was also located in the second car, and that's where Sophie was at. I believe. Okay. You're in a second car, right?
But
Sophie?
How long was the train? Because if you're...
Oh, the train's about 15 cars.
So if you're in the last car.
If you're in the last car.
That's where I'm going.
Right. Well, if you're in the last car, there's AED, and there's all the handicap cars that they have. It's always the second car. It's always a handicap closer to the engine, the caboose. I call it the caboose, the end of the train. They always have AED. So there's also AEDs in front of the train, on both sides of the train.
Okay.
So there are ample number of AED, maybe not in every car.
Right.
But like maybe every other car.
Not every other car. I say in this case, usually maybe 3 to 4 AEDs on a train.
And they are something you see more in public more and more often.
Right, yeah, more and more.
Like Bill, you were saying that you're an umpire. I know I've been to fields and they have the AED prominently located at the entrance.
Some do, some don't.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Well, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. That's an excellent question. And when this AED start talking to us, it says, start compressions. And I started compressions and doing compressions. And this is where Sophie was so awesome. And this, I feel personally, when I did this piece, was really hard for me when I had to do mouth-to-mouth with my colleague. That was really hard. And Sophie did not hesitate. I mean, when it said mouth-to-mouth, she just didn't even blink an eye. And this is where the teamwork was so awesome. And so after she gave mouth to mouth, I started compressions again. And it was another funny thing that I think back is funny that what Sophie did was, she started singing to me when I was doing compressions to Bill. Says, "Staying alive, staying alive, staying alive." She goes, "Follow that beat." But at this point, Sophie didn't know that I can't carry a tune. but she started singing to me, and it was just kind of a neat thing. And so it went on. So,
were you able to observe, or were you aware of your surroundings at the time while you're working on Bill, to know whether or not people around you were, number one, possibly in awe, number two, possibly still frightened, or do you think maybe somebody was actually paying attention to learn so that they could think, geez, maybe next time I won't be so afraid to step in. This guy, he's singing, he can't sing for crap, but he's singing, he's doing it, and we got a nurse here, she's helped. You know, maybe people are paying attention and saying it might not be so bad next time. Maybe next time I'll be the one that could. Do you think while you were doing that you had this awareness or no? Or you
Oh yeah, definitely.
Oh, absolutely. I think it changed a lot of lives on that train that day. And I hear, you know, people that were on the train that share with me and say, "Oh my gosh, I've never seen anything so amazing. It's terrifying." But I think the biggest thing is people are afraid to step in to take charge on something like that.
Well, I'm glad you guys did.
Right, and it sounds like the AED machine was helping walk you through it a little bit.
Absolutely.
Too.
So when that happened, right about, I call this a 12-minute miracle because all this took in 12
That's
minutes.
Amazing.
It's amazing. At 4:48, guess who showed up?
Who?
The paramedics.
Oh, I was
the train moving?
No. Oh, very good question. Oh. Good question. The train would never left the station.
Okay.
The conductor was, the whole time, she was standing right behind me. Her name was Susan. And she was standing right behind me the whole time. And so right away, when the train started moving, everybody started screaming, "Don't leave, don't leave."
Okay.
And right away, she gets on, and I could hear her talking to the engineer. Says, "Don't, stop the train, stop the train."
Okay.
And so, at 4:48, again, only 8 minutes has elapsed. the paramedics showed up at 4:48.
That's amazing.
Is that amazing?
Yes.
I heard they were sprinting all the way to the car four. And as soon as I saw them, I was doing compressions. I looked around and I stopped. And right away they said, do not stop. Keep going. Keep going. We'll tap you out when we're ready. And right when we got, eventually they tapped me out. And that's when a most amazing thing happened at 4:52. When they got there, they must have gave them an adrenaline shot, and they bagged them. They were bagging them. And I had
Bagging him like a body bag?
No, they were...
Okay. You, like, put a bag mask over their mouth to, like, apply oxygen to the patient?
Yeah. Oh, okay.
So
okay.
They're pushing the... Yeah.
They didn't want to touch me.
And then touch you.
Yeah. Sophie's ready brave enough to touch me.
They were already working, so they said, let them work.
Huh? Yeah. So I went back to get my backpack, and right when I got my backpack, I heard the most glorious thing, most glorious scream. And again, the train was still packed. Nobody has left the train.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
The train is still packed. People are still...
The train is still there. The doors are probably open. But nobody got off. They want to watch and see how Bill's going to make up.
Exactly.
With them. Yeah.
But when he woke up, people were terrified.
Oh.
And they started... The train emptied out like in 5 seconds.
Oh,
did they think it was the zombie apocalypse?
The thing is, because Bill, you know, he's a tough-looking guy, right? And he gets up screaming, ready to fight.
Oh.
When the most glorious thing that happened, when he awoke... I was. It was tears of joy for me because I was like, "Oh my gosh, he lived." But I right away got my backpack. I went right back to it because everybody had cleared out. So I went right to him, and the paramedics were trying to hold him down because he wanted to swing and fight. And I told Bill, hey, at that time we were calling him William because they must have got his license.
Okay.
William. I started saying, William. I was with you, man. You were down. Yeah, we did. We used the AED, and you're starting to explain to him what happened. He settled down, and then the most awesome thing happened. He walked off that train all by himself to get on the gurney.
Wow. That's amazing.
Yeah, it was an amazing moment. And as he got on the gurney, I tapped on his shoulder. I go, man, we're going to be running to each other real soon.
So, Sophie, was this just another day in the park for you? I mean, I understand you're an emergency room nurse. What was going through your mind during all of this?
You know, I was on a train going back to visit my parents because I live down in Chicago right now. And I was just sitting there listening to my music when suddenly I heard this woman just rush by me. And she's like, I got to get the AED. I got to get the AED. And you could almost hear the panic in her voice. And, you know, that raises all the hairs in the back of my neck. And I'm like, what's going on? And she said, someone fell. So in my mind, I'm like, well, if somebody fell, why would they need an AED? There's something bad that must be going on. Like, I need to do something about it. And so they said it was, you know, two cars over. So I just stood up and, like, ran my way to, like, two cars over. And I see Bill on the ground, and he's just gasping for air. He's, like, you know, pale, sweaty. And I know, like, something is really bad. So I go over there, and I, you know, feel his carotid pulse, and I just don't feel anything. And I know, like... You got to jump into action. So that's when we ripped his backpack off, started compressions on him, and thankfully the AED came. We shocked him once, Ruben, we switched off compressions, and as we went through the second round, it didn't shock him. And then I was doing breaths, and it was just everything around me. Like, it was just me, Ruben, and Bill. It felt like at that moment, like, everybody around
So you
me.
Were your own world.
Right.
And everybody else could have been there or not. It didn't
exactly,
matter. You
just, exactly.
You had your focus on your mission there.
Right. And so, you know.
Is this the first time you've ever done CPR?
In like a public setting, yes.
Okay.
In like the hospital, we've definitely done CPR before, but with, you know, in a controlled environment with, you know, very advanced technology and like professionals, your whole team standing around, but nothing where it's just, you know, you and AED and, you know,
and a train.
Exactly. And it only was like a 2 minute maybe CPR run, but it felt like, you know, an eternity almost.
Oh, absolutely.
But once the paramedics came, like, I knew, like, this is, you know, the professionals are here, like, we can turn it over. Like, I was covered in sweat, covered in, like, you know, etc. And so I was like, okay, I'll take the step back and let the professionals handle it and let me go back to my cart. And so the whole time I'm like on the train, we eventually like I hear like a ruckus on the train over, and that apparently was Bill like waking up. I thought in my head it was some teenager like putting up this huge fight saying like, get me off this train. I don't like that. We're not moving.
Oh.
So like the whole time I thought it was like somebody that made a ruckus.
Right.
So I'm eventually the train goes and it's about an hour. I'm thinking like, oh, I wonder what happened to that man. He's probably in a hospital, maybe in ICU right now. I'm like, I'm scared. And we eventually stop and I stop and one of the onlookers that saw Bill awake, they said, he's fine. Like he awoke. Like, and he was talking, like that was him shouting. And I felt like the most relief
sure.
in my life.
Sure. Yeah.
And it just felt amazing just, you know, hearing that and hearing that Bill was okay. And that, you know, the work that Ruben and I did, like,
made a difference.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You saved his life.
And I tell you what, and I think, that, first of all, this young lady next to me, she's one of my heroes. She really is. You know, because my daughter, she's at Ball State. She's going to be a nurse. And I can't wait for the two to meet because she did something really neat. She came all the way from car two to car four to get involved. And I'll never forget that. And it was almost like a relay team that us two together were able to save an amazing man. By the way, that's what he is. Everybody just loves Bill. It's almost like it's a wonderful life. whereas George Bailey, I was surprised his name wasn't George. that as soon as people start finding out who I was getting private messages from everywhere. It says, you don't understand who you saved. And you'll get it once you get to know him. And I clearly understand that the good Lord did not want Bill to leave this earth. Mm-hmm. And he left that third door open for him because, hey, there's some people waiting for you in the fourth car.
There you go.
You know, it's so funny that, Bill, you almost didn't catch a train. The exact same thing almost happened to me. I remember going in the Uber to Union Station saying, I'm not going to make it. I think I'm like got to Union Station at like maybe 2 minutes before the train started. And I sprinted my way same onto the train.
And so all the stars in the universe lined up.
And I tell you the truth. I didn't even, my dad was in the hospital and my mom has dementia. I was going to stay home that day to take care of her. But my dad, who's just a strong praying man, he says, hey, mijo, in Spanish, he says, you can go to work. You don't have to stay home. I'm coming home from the hospital to take care of mom.
Wow.
And that day, that morning, I made a decision to go into work.
Look at that.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Well,
and
it was
really wonderful.
Yeah. Now, typically, we only cover one aspect on each show, and our listeners are probably thinking that we're only going to be talking about the recovery and the assistance that people can provide to somebody that's in distress in public. But I think we should hear from the man himself over there.
Yeah. So, Bill, what happened when you left the train and you got to the hospital? What happened from there?
So it's kind of funny. On my own, I don't really remember much. Like, I remember little bits and pieces of things. I remember the paramedics telling me that I was lucky that some guy saved me on the train. And I remember like little bits and pieces of conversation, but I didn't really remember things. And it's kind of like my memory restarted when I was in the emergency room. But then when I met Ruben and I was talking to Ruben later on, he would say, oh yeah, and then I told you this. And then as he's telling me that, then I kind of remember that being said to me. Like, I don't like have visual memory.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
But I do remember that being said to me by someone.
Right.
So as he's telling me things, but my memory kind of didn't restart until I was in the emergency room at Rush downtown. And that was even kind of strange. The first thing I remember is seeing one of my son's friends he's a Chicago police officer.
Oh, okay.
And I've only seen him out in Oswego when he's not working. Mm-hmm. And he comes in, you know, he's got all his vest mm-hmm. and, you know, he's got all his equipment and he's all loaded up and he comes walking in the room. And I'm like, Brian, what are you doing
here? What's going on?
And it turns out that that's his area of the city that he works, is where Rush is.
Okay.
And I didn't know that, but my kids were golfing with a couple other friends that are also police officers. And when my wife called my sons to tell them to come home, the friends that they were golfing with called this guy Brian. And he went and found me in the emergency room, and then he was like telling my family how to get there, and he kind of waited there and made sure that they could navigate through the hospital, because it's it's a maze.
Yeah.
Just hallways going everywhere. Mm-hmm. But he helped them get there, and he like, so I mean, it was just kind of amazing.
Everything just clicked that day.
Right.
Yeah,
I mean,
wow.
It's too much to just be coincidence.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And I tell you what, and I have to share this with you guys, because I think it's a powerful part of the story. After everything happened, a friend of mine's friend was on the train, and he saw everything. And right away, he knew who I was and says, "Hey, Phil, your friend Ruben was just on a train, and him and another young lady saved a guy's life." And right away, my friend Phil, I had hopped on another train, sent me a text. He goes, "Hey, do you mind if I put something on your Facebook about what happened?" And I go, yeah, you can. Go ahead. And that's when it lit up, and found out that Bill and I are so close in so many ways. And my son helped onboard him where he currently works. He works for a recruiting firm. And it was just a weird thing. His office where he worked found out that he had a heart attack. And I just finished telling my son that this happened. And they go, "Oh, no way. It's not possible. It's the same." And it was. And so everybody started finding out, long story short. And so Bill and his family got a hold of my number. And I was asked if it's okay if his doctors call me. I said, sure. So the very next morning, about 9 a.m., I get a call, and it's two cardiologists, and who knows how many students were in the room, but they started interviewing me, and we talked for about 20 minutes, and they were asking all the details, because at this point, I knew he was alive, but I didn't know if he was talking or if he was in a coma or whatever. So, and I know due to HIPAA, they couldn't tell me anything, and so they started asking me questions, and after I told them everything, they said, "Mr. Rodriguez, we just want you to know that what you told us, what you shared with us, means the world to us. I think we know what it is, how to diagnose this." And right there, I got real quiet. And I go, "Doctors, can I ask you a question?" And they go, "Yeah, sure." I go, did we do the right thing? You know, I'm not in the medical profession. And he goes, "Mr. Rodriguez, we wish there were more people like you on this earth." And that was so powerful, and that they hung up. And the very next day, I mean, not the very next day, about 30 minutes after that, I get a second call. And this time, it's somebody kind of emotional on the other line. It says, "Ruben?" Oh, yeah, this is Ruben. This is Bill. And I can tell that his wife was with him, I believe, and his kids. And he said this, I can't thank you enough for what you did. Because of you, I'm here with my family right this moment. And I just want you to know that I will never, ever forget this, and forever you'll be my brother." And it was just a powerful moment for me. And I had to, should I better go to a conference room, because I'm starting to cry, you know, tearing up. Just talking to my new wonderful friend, Bill Hennessy. And I go on to tell, we share more.
Wow, praise God.
Amazing.
If our listeners could only see the amount of Kleenex going around right now.
We do have extra.
Yeah.
But Bill, did you have any heart issues before this? Nope. Or what?
Nope.
What
no happened? Issues, no indication anything was wrong, no nothing.
So you were a coach, I did other sports.
I played sports. I'm actually very active. Okay. I play basketball every week.
Okay. How about cholesterol wise?
My cholesterol is fine.
Okay. So what?
My blood pressure has always been fine.
What did they every end up time, diagnosing you with?
If you don't mind just asking.
So the next day, they took me down for the first round of tests, and I think they called it a contrast test.
Mm-hmm.
where they were putting dying through my wrist, but they were sending it through my heart. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of weird. I was awake the whole time, and I had a big, like, 65-inch screen TV that I could see everything that all the doctors and everyone else in the room. It's a teaching hospital, so right. There's always, like, one main doctor and then, like, two or three...
Doogie Howsers.
Associates. No, and then there's, like, 8 or 10, like, students that right. were always... So, I mean, it was never... So all these people are in the room, and they're like, I can see the dye going through, and I can see different things, and I realize that they keep going back to the same thing over and over and over again.
They're looking at something.
Right. So I kind of figured they found something, but I, you know, so when it was done, I kind of waited, and I said, okay, I kind of said, well, you know, what did you find anything? And he said, yes. He said, it's pretty amazing. He goes, you have no plaque in your coronary arteries at all. And I'm, you know, I'm a heavy guy. I carry a few pounds extra. But, you know.
Good genes.
But he said, you have no plaque in your arteries, but you have a birth defect.
Oh.
And I'm like, a birth defect? He goes, yeah. He said, your left coronary artery doesn't start out like everyone else's. And I was, you know, I kind of said, you know, it was just a surprise. I mean,
sure.
I was almost 52 years old. How do you get to be that old and then find out you have a birth defect?
Right.
And so I said to the doctor, I said, well, I go, have you ever seen this before? And he goes, well, he goes, I've been doing this for 35 years. I've seen this like 3 times before in my life.
Hmm.
So. Wow. And so what actually happens is most people, your left coronary artery comes off your left aorta, mm-hmm. and then supplies blood to the left side of your heart. With mine, my left coronary artery originated from my right aorta, and then it went between my pulmonary arteries and then wrapped around to the left side of my heart. And so what they think happened was they suspect that my pulmonary arteries expanded to get more air or send more blood to my lungs to get more oxygen from jogging or whatever. And they expanded and cut off the blood supply to the left side of my heart.
Okay.
But this isn't much... I mean, this is going to be a lot different than, like, when you're playing basketball because you're...
What's what I'm saying? Like, I run way harder. Yeah. I work way harder.
Just something triggered it like that?
I don't know. That, again, that's another thing.
Yeah.
Why now? Why right. not? I mean, I was on the football team in high school. Wow. I played rugby in college, and especially rugby. Wow.
Yeah.
That's right. Way more cardio demanding than anything I, you know, jogging
heat,
to the train.
Heat related? I mean, could the heat have been a factor?
It Maybe. Was so hot that day.
I don't know.
It really was.
Maybe.
Okay. So what did they end up doing?
So they had to wait another day to run another set of tests on Thursday, and then Friday morning they took me in, and I had a single bypass surgery. And they rerouted my plumbing, basically.
Okay.
And they took another vein out of my chest. And now instead of running through my pulmonary arteries, my blood supply to the left side of my heart is coming directly from the heart, not being rerouted or whatever.
Okay.
I know I'm probably not saying it correctly.
No,
Gene, do you think that's like what Dvorak had?
It is.
Transposition of the great arteries?
Yeah. I think it's something similar?
Yeah.
But it's not, it wasn't a transposition. It was just, yeah, something similar.
Okay.
So, yeah, we've spoken with a young man who had something similar, but it was diagnosed very, very early on.
Right. He's had a couple of different procedures. And I know that he had to have a pacemaker put in mm-hmm. Because of it also.
Mm-hmm.
So what is your health going to look like in the future then?
Well, so we actually did talk about a pacemaker. But then in the end, the doctors decided that since I had, you know, I'm going to oversimplify, but since I had a plumbing issue and they corrected the plumbing issue, they didn't feel that I should need anything permanent like a pacemaker or anything implanted permanently going forward.
And did they do all of this through a catheter?
No.
Oh.
So you had to have open heart surgery.
I had open heart surgery. I have the full zipper in my chest now.
Are you going to do anything special for Halloween?
Heart-related?
Okay. Go as Frankenstein.
Posting nowhere near Halloween, so our listeners are probably wondering what.
Oh,
but,
all right.
Okay.
Okay. All right.
Can we get back to the AEDs?
Yeah.
Okay. We touched on it earlier, but, you know, we see it on TV. People are using the doctors are using the AEDs and all of that. What can you tell? I mean, you started to tell us about, but how easy is it to use? I mean, it sounds like without this AED, we might not even be here. And it's a crucial thing. How easy is it to learn to use? Can anybody use it?
It is extremely simple and easy. It's almost user-friendly. They will step you through every single step. The machine will guide you. I think a lot of people get, you know, intimidated by the machine, intimidated by initiating CPR. But I think once you familiarize yourself with the class, with the machine, you will find that it is not difficult to use, and it is something so crucial and critical in saving someone's life that it's really a skill that I think is necessary for people to learn.
Do they have classes available for this?
Yeah, definitely. Through the American Heart Association, even local classes, you can find at your hospital or different private practices. You can find little, like maybe, you know, a couple hour classes, you know, for one day, and you learn the skill set that you will use for the rest of your life.
Okay, and that's for AED or CPR? I mean, so they add that now.
Exactly. So CPR, and you will learn the use of an AED in the CPR class.
They have different uses. I don't know the best way to explain it, but for like adult and also for children, kids, right? Mm-hmm.
So there are smaller AEDs for children?
So it's the same machine, just smaller pads for children, but same process. And the CPR class will give you like a good instruction on how to give your care versus with an adult versus like a child.
Okay.
But essentially in the end of the day, it really is the same procedures and steps. So you don't have to be scared if someone's an older person or someone's a young child.
Okay.
You learn that skill set, and then you can use that the rest of your life.
And for our international listeners, the American Red Cross or Red Crescent or Red Crystal, depending on your region, will have courses available. And mm-hmm. then they also have courses online if you don't have a regional Red Cross, Red Crescent, or Red Crystal near you.
Yeah, you can definitely find a class near you or online. There's cpr.heart.com you can definitely find a course anywhere near you.
Okay, great. Great.
So it's interesting. So Bill and I, and Sophie works third shift, so it's kind of difficult for her to show up to this, but we met with the American Heart Association, and we got to talk to their board in Chicago.
Wow.
And that was really neat. It was really neat. And they said some interesting there. Two things. First of all, that there's only 10% survivors right now. In terms, when this happens and out in public, only 10% of people survive. And I'm kind of glad I didn't know those odds. But
I'm glad Bill didn't listen to those odds.
10%. And it's so important that something is done right away. And the other thing that was there, they brought a mannequin there, a compression, what do you call that? Mannequin. But one thing they're saying, the mannequin, I kind of looked at it, I go, oh my gosh, it was a woman mannequin.
Okay.
And so they're starting to make women mannequins because they say that women are less likely to get CPR because people are conscious about taking their shirts off, right?
Okay.
To expose.
Mm-hmm.
So they want people to start getting used to.
Or doing compressions on women.
Doing compressions on women, right? Because
it's
one of those things. So I found that really intriguing.
Yeah.
For sure, for sure.
And I know, I believe the American Heart Association and the Red Cross, they actually have kits where you can have your own if you're going to be having like a family or a group.
Practicing
your hair. To rent.
They sell it in a package. They sell one in a package, and you can take it home. So if you don't feel comfortable, like if you want to reacquaint yourself with it or you want to practice more at home, they have small kits.
They have
infants, toddlers, and adult mannequins.
I'll put links on that.
Yes,
on the
absolutely.
And one thing.
Great they, Christmas or holiday
one,
gift.
One thing they did say is this, that they're saying this 10%, that is too low.
Yeah.
What can we do different to raise those odds? And this is what they said they're starting to do. It says they want people to get so comfortable with providing CPR that it's like riding a bike. And so their thing is repetition every single
sure.
year.
Mm-hmm. Well, like for Sophie, you like setting up the AED, it was automatic for you.
Right,
the
exactly.
placement and everything.
Yeah, because I work at Northwestern Memorial Hospital, downtown Chicago, and we see a lot of traumas. We see people with gunshot wounds coming in with cardiac arrest, and it's almost like, you know, second nature, what to do, what mm-hmm. you need to do. But I mean, it's different when, you know, you're working, you know, outside of the field of healthcare, and this is totally something new, something you don't see on a daily basis. But you never know if, you know, your loved one, like your mom, she passes out at home, or if you're at work and something like this happens, what do? You either, you know, don't freeze, or you could have like the skills and know about CPR, know about how to use an AED to jump in and, you know.
Well, I think you guys, this whole event will have ripple effects where other people learn about it and hear about it and think, I don't know if I would know what to do. Let me go ahead and take a class and tell my family about it. Maybe they can. So that's amazing.
Oh, Gene, you're so right. And you know, the people that have come up to me, or even at my work, people wanted to take classes. People call me. I mean, hundreds and hundreds of people, if not thousands. Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, maybe potential CPR instructor in the future, maybe.
I think so.
Oh, for me?
I think you guys could have a team.
Yeah.
And Bill, I'm sure you feel just as strong as they do about people being trained in CPR. And
absolutely. That was why initially we tried to talk to the news and Channel 7 came out and did the interview. But just the whole idea is to try and get people to be aware. And honestly, I told you I play basketball every week. I actually run an adult open gym for the Oswego Park District. And when they brought it's at the Oswego High School, and when they brought AEDs into the high school, I actually had to get trained.
Oh, wow. So you know how to use them.
I'd learned CPR when I started the job.
Okay.
I had to go and get recertified. I had been certified. Last time I had been certified was like in college.
Okay.
But I mean, I kind of know what to do. Mm-hmm. So, but it's like Ruben was saying, it's good to have the refresher.
Right.
Sure.
And like Sophie was saying, it's good to have it where it's ingrained.
And then when they brought the AEDs into the school, mm-hmm. then I went and I got AED trained. So
okay.
I know how to help other people. I just wasn't able to help myself.
Sure.
No, right. I guess you're not really in the position. Well, thank you very much, all three of you. We really appreciate the fact that you stayed to share your story with us today. Thank you very much.
Yeah, this has been amazing. We really appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome. Such an honor for you guys to ask us to do this. So thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you so much for having us.
Really. Yeah, we really hope that others are going to pick up your opinions and go take CPR and AED classes.
If our listeners have any questions or comments related to today's show, they can contact us at podcastdx@yahoo.com, through our website, podcastdx.com, on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, or Instagram.
And if you have a moment to spare, please give us a review wherever you get your podcast. As always, please keep in mind that this podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regime. And never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you have heard on this podcast.
Till next week.